Welcome to the SDR Disco Call Vidcast and Podcast, a show designed for brand new sales reps working in the world of tech sales. I'm your host, Neil Buyan, and I'm going to be taking you on a journey on the SDR Disco Call Vidcast and Podcast. Did you know that you can watch this show live with the guests on YouTube? This show is available on YouTube at happyselling.io. Hello, listeners, watchers, subscribers, and fans of the SDR Disco Call Show. Welcome to another chapter. If you stumbled across this and this is your first time, you may be asking yourself, why should I be watching or listening to this podcast? Well, we're in the world of sales development and in the world of tech sales. My name is Neil Buyan. I'm the founder of happyselling.io. I'm an SDR coach, I'm an SDR trainer, and I love the world of sales development. And what we look to do in these shows is to bring insights from people across the globe that work in this industry to either get you interested of coming on board, or if you're actually working in this industry already, to give you tips, insights, and share best practices to help you become what I call happy sellers. And this episode is actually another special episode in itself because it's a solo episode with your boy. If you're listening to this in your local podcast platform, please make sure that you give us a rating and share this episode with anybody that you think could benefit from it. And also, if you're watching this on YouTube, make sure that you like, comment, and subscribe down below as it helps with the algorithm and gets the message out there. So for a little bit of context, back on episode 64, I did another solo episode where I was sharing insights about being an SDR at a company called Zora, the failures I had as being a micromanager, building out a team, trying to transition into an AE role, and then also insights of joining another startup called Showpad. And as it's been a couple of episodes since, I thought it'd be cool to continue the story and actually say what happened when I went into the job of Showpad, how I kind of failed as an account executive, but then how I also found success in customer success. So to kind of set the scene, this was back in about 2015, right? So I was coming to the end of my tenure at Zora. I was an SDR manager, had quite a successful team, but my ego got the better of me and all I wanted to do was have that AE life. And if we go back to the previous episode, so I remember chatting to PJ, giving the talk, and I remember David just sitting in the background like the media mogul that he is, and his two hands and fingers together, and he's just got his fingers over his lips. And I'm walking the walk and talking the talk with PJ, and I know that I kind of sold him, and I told him like what I want to do is become an AE, but what I'm happy to do is go back into being an SDR to prove my worth, bring what I've learned from this company Zora, and try and help you guys like break into the UK market. And then David came in and I think he could smell the BS. Like there was an element where I wasn't, you know, ready to be the AE, and he could sense that and I could sense that as well. But he just gave a few questions, and at the end of it, he gave his feedback and he kind of laid it down the law for me. And he kind of said like, look, Neil, I think you're a great guy. You've got great potential. You've got an extensive knowledge at this company Zora, like they're big dogs and we know a lot about them. And I definitely think that you could, you know, help us out as well if you're willing to move. But this AE thing, I think there's some things that you still need to learn. But what we're happy to do is help you learn those things. Because if you think about Showpad, we sell to VPs of sales. We sell to VPs of marketing. Like the world of sales is what we're all about.
God, I look and sound a little bit different and I've aged quite a little bit as well. But anywho, so as we kind of saw, I was talking to David DePree, Louis and PJ at Showpad about joining on board. So what happened thereafter is the case of me having to hand in my notice at Zora. So obviously this was a decision that I already had in my head and, you know, I kind of vetted out Showpad and saw them as the place that I wanted to go to. And the way that I kind of looked at it was, here's an analogy that I've given to people in the past is, imagine if you went to university and graduated and got your MBA, whatever that was. Again, never had a degree, but imagine if you could go back to college or high school with all that information and knowledge and then kind of excel. And that's kind of the way that I looked at Showpad. They were a young startup. They were based out in Belgium, but they've just launched the London office and they were looking to build that out. And I saw here an opportunity for me to actually join something and kind of help build it up from the ground up again. And that's something that I really enjoyed. So when it came to the actual handing in my notice, you know, the team's really doing well. We're coming to the end of our fiscal year. And I kind of looked at myself and I said, well, look, I've done the best that I can do here. There isn't a path for me to become an account executive. They kind of want me to stay in leadership, which is, you know, fine and fair for the business. And back then, it was just my ego, like, I want to go do this closing life. So I remember having a chat with my boss at the time. He was based out in the US. And, you know, there had been like a little bit of dip in pipe, but things had like started to pick back up. And I was asking about, you know, what does my future look like at Zora? And obviously when you have premeditated thoughts, you're like, whatever they're going to say, I'm just still going to run with it. I still wanted to give a chance to see, is there any sort of, you know, chance for me to stay here? But as the conversation kind of concluded, everything was going to just stay as is. Numbers and everything were on point. So it was at this point that I was able to say to my boss at the time, I'm officially handing in my resignation. And, you know, this was a little bit daunting to kind of come out of my mouth. And I was thinking, how do I prepare for all of this sort of stuff? But the response that I received kind of indicated to me that, you know, it wasn't going to damage them. You know, they were pretty much set. Because it was kind of like, okay, that's good. Totally understand it. You know, we respect your decision. Let's start talking about, you know, how we're going to be doing offboarding. And I kind of sat there and thought, am I just a number? You know, like I was hoping for like violins, you know, like clawing back. But, you know, that's just my ego talking again. But yeah, you know, it was kind of official. And I remember kind of like alluding to my boss, like, I want this to come from me because I don't want to, you know, like worry the team or anything like that. But I think literally the next day an email communication went out that I was out, and I was just like, I didn't approve this, but it is what it is. And that's kind of how it landed. And I remember like kind of sitting down with the team thereafter, and we were talking about like my farewell drinks and everything. And I just kind of gave them the reasons, like, look, I'm, you know, a new dad. I've been here for a couple of years. I've seen the company transform and change, and it wasn't the same startup that I joined years prior. And it's, you know, time for me to move on because I felt that this is the best position that I could leave it in. You know, there was a few people like, why? Like, come on, this company is going to go IPO one day. And I said, I get it. But I was just like, if we look at all the people that are here now, you have the right people in place. All of you guys and girls are performing quite well. You're hitting your numbers. You know what you're doing. You don't really need me anymore. So, you know, kind of conclude it with Zora. No hard feelings. And if anything, I learned a hell of a lot within that business, and I was really grateful, you know, for it. But things came to an end, and, you know, everything was cool. We had the, you know, the farewells and the drinks and the vibes. I had a period where, you know, I kind of did the handover, you know, sitting there, and I kind of realized at this point, and I've learned this as a manager, is that when you hand in your notice, you check out, right? You're not worried about the updates. You're not worried about the CRM. You don't really care about the numbers. Like, if, you know, because like you're out, you know, you're going to be moving on soon. But I think a really good thing that I did was I had a couple of weeks where before I went from Zora to Showpad that I was able to decompress. And I think being there for like 3.5 years plus definitely needed, right? And obviously I wanted to spend some time with my son, Blake, like in his early years. And it was just cool just to switch off for a couple of weeks and whatnot. So enjoyed that gardening leave sort of life, did all the, you know, exit interviews with Zora. And I actually did give some feedback. And here's a point. I'd always say when you're exiting interviews, this is really like a good point where you can give advice to the business that you're leaving of what's working, what's not working. And you can kind of say it from a place without any sort of repercussions or worries from HR. But I definitely did give in terms of like onboarding, supporting the SDRs, you know, like courses that they should be put on, like if they want to go into leadership, the stuff that I didn't have, right? So that was all done and dusted. And then I remember like with Showpad, I was then starting to get ready to join a new biz. And it was really exciting because I remember like David Dupree, like who is my VP of sales and my mentor, was like stating, you know, we're going to like book you some tickets to come out to Belgium. And I'd never been to Belgium at that point before. And that was something really cool. And they were kind of like walking me through like how my first couple of weeks are going to be and everything. And they booked me tickets on the Eurostar. Again, never been on the Eurostar at that point as well. And I just remember like being at home and just thinking, here's my new opportunity of going into this job where we agreed I'll be an SDR for a couple of months. And then I'll, you know, finally go into that AE life that I'd been dreaming of. So you know, we booked all the tickets. They sent me off to Belgium, and I was spending, I think, about a week, 2 weeks there. And that was a surreal experience in itself. So I remember arriving in Belgium, and it was in Ghent, or Ghent, G-H-E-N-T, or G-E-N-T, however you want to spell it. And they booked me like an Airbnb. And I think I arrived there on a Sunday evening, so that I was available to come in on the Monday morning. And I remember arriving in Belgium on a Sunday evening, and then finding my way from Ghent station, and then finding my Airbnb. And I've always had this habit of, and I did this at Zora when I went to California, that I'd find my place that I'm staying, and then I would go walk to the office to know how much of a distance it was and where I needed to be walking the next morning. I remember, like, it was walking along a canal in Mustrat to the Chopard Belgium office. And I was just like, doesn't feel like California. It doesn't feel like London, but it is definitely a different place. And I love just being in new places. Anyway, coming back to my Airbnb, I realized I was really hungry. So I went for a walk around the town that I was in. And everything was closed. And I realized with Belgians that, you know, they're not as active on London times. So trying to find food was just near impossible. And they had like night shops, but there were few and far between trying to find something. So like a night shop, like in the evening, think of like a 7-Eleven or a Spa. And all I could find was a microwave cheeseburger. There was a case of Duvel, which I picked up as well, which is the local Belgian famous beer. And then just came back to my apartment, had a FaceTime with the family. And I remember thinking, all right, I got a new job. I'm going to celebrate this. And I had a Duvel. And unbeknownst to me, that Duvel beers are completely different to like the UK beers. And I remember working at my laptop, which they, you know, sent to me prior to me coming out. And I remember like being at my desk, and then I stood up and I was like, woo. Because yeah, with Belgian beers, they are a hell of a lot stronger, but it takes a lot of time for that to kick in. And I was like, okay, I'm waved. But anyway, went to bed, woke up the next morning, and I was really excited and nervous to go into this office. So I head down Mutstrat in the morning, I get there, you know, an hour earlier than expected. I walk up to this big building, and you could see like the Chopard logo in the reception. And I met the receptionist, and she said, I think it was like the fifth or sixth or seventh floor or something, or fourth floor, and got the lift up. And then I remember walking into the reception of Chopard, and I saw the logo on the wall. I was like, I'm here. And then I walk in, and the easiest way that I can explain it was kind of like a Google type office, you know, like a, not a WeWork, but, you know, there was open like rooms with windows for the meeting rooms, and there was like a stage area, and there was like a lunch table and everything like that. Also at that point, there were three other UK people that had come over, and these were my counterparts, and these were the guys that I was going to be working with in the London office. So we all came together on our onboarding week. The nerves were like kind of hitting me, like when I shook their hands. We had Tom Herbert, we had Ajmal and Job Adams as well. And when I met these guys at first point, I felt a little bit intimidated, because we had one guy who was an account executive at Box.com. We had Tom, who'd worked in sales before, and he was a funny guy. And we had Job, who'd already worked in the startup scene, and they're all like kind of AE level already. So I kind of felt like, well, I'm only the young SDR. If anything, I was actually older than some of them. I was the young new SDR for Chopard. So, you know, we got the talking, we're exchanging notes of where we've been, like how did we come to work at Chopard. And then we got to meet Celine Vincent. So Celine was like the head of sales development at the time and my future boss. And they literally just walked us around the office, and they just introduced us to everyone. So we went to an area of the floor where it was just all the salespeople. And I remember meeting like Cedric Tyson, Rob Vichelden, Ariana Van Unrep, who was, you know, my future AE. And everybody was just so freaking friendly, and they were really welcoming. And there was like saying, let's definitely catch up for lunch. We'll go out, we'll take you. We then went to go meet the developers and the tech team. We met HR, and everybody just like, they made an effort to introduce you to all the departments and introduce you as the new UK sales reps. And kind of contrasting it with what was life like at Zora versus joining at Chopard, it was completely different, because when we joined at Zora, it was just me and a couple of account executives, and we had a small box room. But here we already had an established office in Belgium. So, you know, throughout the week, it was pretty much meeting all the different departments and understanding, you know, why they exist, what are their values, what's their mission statement per department. and also like how they collaborate with sales. And what I really got a sense and a vibe of was they made an importance of not trying to teach you the company's software or the sales methodology or anything. It was like knowing the company and the people behind it. You know, in later years as a manager, that's how I kind of built my onboarding. That first week was to teach people, you know, meet all the department heads and know why they exist, because these were the people that you would come back later to ask for help when you're in your sales cycle, or, you know, go ask for advice on how does this integration work, or, hey, I've got this problem with this customer. So it was really cool to meet all of these people. And I think that's really important with the sales rep's first week or two of onboarding, really get to know the business and the company. And obviously we got to meet the likes of PJ and Louis, like the co-CEOs, and kind of hearing from them. And what was really important was understanding, you know, their point of view on the mission of what Showpad was trying to do for sales and marketing with, you know, their solution, which was freaking cool. And I really geeked out on it and I loved it. And as the week went on, we had lots of opportunities to go for lunches. We also learned that Belgians love to walk everywhere. And if anybody said, oh, it's only a 10-minute walk, that means it's a 30-minute walk. Also being introduced to the show bikes. So they were big on cycling and we had our own bicycles that we could like take out for the day. And it was just so freaking cool to like cycle around Belgium and in Ghent, being taken out for lunch. And it was just this, I remember like speaking back to home, like on my FaceTimes, and just always saying, do you know what? They're so cool. They're so friendly. They make you feel so welcome. So yeah, shouts out to my Belgian crew. Like it really loved kind of going to Belgium. So as you know, that week, those weeks took place, it was all about coming back home. And I just had this vibe of, I joined the right company. I've joined the right startup. Here is an opportunity for me to really like help this business grow with the knowledge of what I've got. I've got some really cool people around me. So with London Showpad, we had an office within Shoreditch around the Silicon Roundabout. I think it was called Eagle House. And we, you know, just had this small little co-working space. And it was like, again, it was another box room. And I remember just being in this gray room. And I think I'll put a picture in for anybody that's watching on YouTube, because I remember taking a picture the first day that I was there. And we had Yob, Ajmal, Tom, myself, and Ariana and David would come in every now and then because they were off doing customer meetings from the meetings that were already booked or meeting existing customers. And these two, Ariana and David, were kind of like the footprint for Showpad UK and had a lot of love and respect. And I saw these people as like the type of salespeople that I want to be. But I remember like coming back from the hype of Belgium and I'm sitting like it's Monday or Tuesday, like it was Monday afternoon. And I'm sitting in the room and it's just dead quiet. Like we had all the other reps just on their laptops and I'm just sitting there looking at my Salesforce CRM and just thinking, where's the hype and buzz gone? It just felt really like, it just kind of felt like the dream had ended sort of thing. So we are here to, you know, really help launch Showpad UK. We've got some really cool salespeople, but there's no sales stuff going on. So I thought, right, I went into my CRM, found a bunch of leads, and then I thought to myself, cool, I need to do something about this. So, you know, when it comes to cold calling. So I got my leads and I remember there's this one guy called Boris Ausch. He was like the head of global sales enablement for PTC at the time. And I always remember this first cold call that I did. And again, with this cold calling, there were no scripts. We didn't have anything from Showpad in terms of that. But we did have a customer list. We had a website, some case studies and stuff like that. But I just remember calling Boris and just saying, hi, Boris. My name's Neil from Showpad. The reason for my call is I see that you're the head of global sales enablement. I work for a company called Showpad. But cut a long story short, didn't book the meeting, but I had a conversation for about 5 to 10 minutes because Boris, he respected me cold calling him and he entertained the conversation, but he was just like saying, like, we've already got these tools inbuilt with PTC. You know, we don't have any like looks for a sales enablement solution like Showpad, etc. And I kind of got to the end of the call and I was just like, oh man, you know, I didn't book a meeting because it was going on for quite a while time. And, you know, I thought I was going to get it, but I didn't. But as soon as I put the phone down, I sat there, kind of sat back and just a little bit annoyed. But then I had Ajmal, Yob and Tom look around and they were like, and they just stood up and they're like, dude, where did you get that script from? Like, how did you do like all of that stuff? And that sounded sick. Like, that was amazing, man. And I was like, but I didn't book the meeting. They're like, no, but still, like, you really spoke as if you're like, you've been working it for a long time and you, they're just the way. And I was like, really? They're like, yeah, dude, that was freaking amazing. It's like, yeah, I need to do that. So what happened thereafter, the following day when I came into the office, I remember walking in and you just heard a buzz. Like, Ajmal was on the phone, Tom was on the phone, Yob was on the phone. And I was just like, oh, cool. Like, this is what I was looking for. This was that hype that we had in Belgium. And it just took one person to put their foot forward, not really win, but it, you know, it buzzed the hype and team. And I remember, like, the weeks that ensued, like, me and David would catch up and he would say, like, to me, like, we need this sort of hype. We need this buzz. We need to really take this bull by the horn. So he said, do that sort of stuff, like, show them, learn from each other. You know, as the weeks went ensued, like, we're booking meetings, like, we're hearing successes and meetings that we're booking for Ariana and David, they're going out, you're doing them, we're hearing the feedback. And it was like, I love this instant sort of feedback. And Ariana would always like, Neil, man, like, you've booked this meeting, I love that, and I love your notes. And I kept getting feedback of like, I'd always put like in my cold call notes and my discovery notes into this year, and they're like, your notes are so detailed. And I think I still actually have some emails from Ariana where she was like saying that she loves it, it just made her life so much more easier. And that's the type of feedback that an SDR needs, you know, that they have an impact, that they're valued in the work that they're doing. It's not just booking a meeting and the person goes off and you don't hear nothing about it, right? So it got to a point where I really like started sitting down with Ariana, because I saw her as me, what I wanted to do, become like an account executive. So I thought, shadow. And I remember many a time I would sit outside one of the meeting rooms where I'd see Ariana like doing demos or, you know, having calls, some of them which I'd booked for her. And I just always used to remember, like, she was this high energy, fast paced talker, like, no BS. Like, she just had this confidence that she just emitted. And one thing I kept noticing with Ariana was every time she was in her discovery call, she was pacing up and down the room, up and down the room, and like gesticulating with her hands and everything. And I was like, looks like she's having a fight with someone or she's getting really mad. And so I kind of pulled her to the side and I just said, like, what's with the walking? And she said, you know what? I do it for energy, because if I sit down at my desk having a call, she said, I'm very monotone and, you know, I can't really like admit like how passionate I am about this solution or having that conversation. And that really stuck with me. And I was like, yeah, you're right. I said, because the energy, like listening back to some of her calls, like it was intimidating, but fun to hear. And then I got into this rhythm with Ariana where, you know, she actually took like lead of like sitting down with me and saying, look, these are the accounts that I want you to book meetings on. So she was giving me direction. And the deal kind of was, I said to her, I said, look, I really want to become an account executive. So if I can shadow these calls, if I can join them, if I can come on site to some of these meetings as well, like this is really going to expose me to the life that I want. And, you know, I put my hands up and say, if it wasn't for Ariana, I wouldn't learn some of the techniques that I've learned in closing if it wasn't for her. So I remember like going to meetings with her, like Newbury. We went to go meet Softcat PLC. We met some big logos like Daisy Group. And I remember like attending these, like getting suited and booted. She would be there, I'd be there. And like we'd meet up before. And we'd always have this thing, like this saying between us. Every time we booked a meeting, we'd be like, yay, yay, and just laugh about it. And she said, yeah, we're going for this meeting, dude. This is so sick. And just like, and she'd always like be prepping me like before we walk in, like who the main stakeholders are, like what's the aim, objective of this like meeting, what we're looking to do. But also like giving me props and giving me my flowers for booking these meetings for her. Like she really showed, you know, appreciation. And, you know, that really strengthened our relationship. But there were many a time where we'd walk in and like the prospects or, you know, prospects would ask like why they're two of you. And they said, so who's like, because I had the title of business development rep and she would have account exec, like, what's the difference? And I loved it the way that Ariana said, like, he's my partner in this. Like he was the one that actually reached out to your business and booked the meetings and, you know, introduced Showpad. And this is how this meeting came about. She'd always give me those props and made me feel really special. But what we was able to do over time, as we got more comfortable, is we were able to like co-pilot with each other. So if Ariana was doing the pitch and, you know, if there was something missed, I was able to then chime in. If there was an objection, I was able to help with that. And we like bounced off each other. And I just remember like always walking out of these meetings, like spudding her and just saying, that was sick. Like, that was so fun. And she's like, yeah, yeah. So it was fun, like going out with Ariana and just seeing her. And she'd always be like giving me feedback, you know, like if you're in the meeting and they say this, this is what they really mean. And did you notice when they did this? She was coaching me in real time as I was doing this. And, you know, I absolutely loved that. So as time went on, you know, I really fell in love with the idea of sales enablement. So with Showpad, what we were looking to do is basically help sales reps to sell better. But we were also trying to bring together two departments that typically were in silos. So you had marketing and sales. And what we were looking to do is to bring these two departments together to help them realize they actually are working towards the same goal, which was to generate revenue. And, you know, one of the pitches that we had is 70% of the content created by marketing goes unused by sales, and they lose like thousands of dollars per year. And then we also saw with sales reps is they always want this up-to-date content they can present in front of customers, but they don't always have access to the right stuff. It's either sitting on a Google Drive or a laptop or, you know, on some sort of intranet. So Showpad was a tool that was on your laptop, it was on your phone, it was on your iPad. And again, I really geeked out on iPad and Apple stuff, which actually I'm going to come back to in a minute. But, you know, able to do presentations, send those presentations, but actually see how long a prospect was spending on a particular slide or a page. So as a sales rep, what you were able to do is know exactly what they wanted after a sales interaction, so that when you followed up, it was more tailored. So it could be, you know, out of these five pages, I think it's option two that you really want. And I think that's where we should be focusing on. And also with marketing, we was able to give them insights as to what sales reps were actually using in the field, what was their most popular content. And the pitch we used to kind of say is, imagine if you had a bucket of 1,000 pictures, and you knew the top three pictures that kept getting looked at again and again and used again. That was the kind of power that we were giving to marketeers and to sales reps. And to come back to this Apple point, so if you may remember in episode one of the SDR Disco Call podcast, one of the reasons that I got into sales was I was a big fan of the iPhone. That's what got me interested in tech. And it was me convincing a whole bunch of people to buy an iPhone when they didn't really want it or need it. And then one day, one of my friends, Michael, said to me, like, are you on the payroll for Apple? Or are you on the commission list? And that's what sparked me wanting to like get into sales. And a dream of mine was always to one day work for Apple. And I remember with Showpad, one day in a company update, they announced that we had formed an official partnership with Apple, like with their devices. And we also signed a partnership with Microsoft. So in essence, I kind of got my dream of being able to work with Apple via Showpad, and I just remember it bringing a huge smile to my face. So, you know, as time went on, the company built, and then we actually moved over to one of the first flagship WeWorks, which was in Moorgate. And I remember David telling us, like, we've secured a new site, expanding the offices. I think we had our Series B funding, which is super cool as well. So yeah, we finally moved to WeWork Moorgate. We was one of the first startups in that when they first launched way back in the day. And here we had an opportunity where there was loads of other startups within the WeWork. And we actually got to live like a startup co-working space life. And we had beers on taps. There was parties. I think I went to a party once with Mark Manson, which is freaking cool. But the Showpad family started to grow and we started to hire more people. The team got bigger. We had more account executives. You know, our customer success team had grown and we'd really created a footprint for Showpad UK. And there was many times when we went on to some cool trips. You know, we went to Seville in Spain. I can't remember the name of it. It's gone, but we went to a really cool beach place. And the Showpad sales kickoffs were freaking fun. And I remember this one where we went to like the countryside within Belgium, and I'm really going to hate myself for not remembering where it was. But here was an event where the theme of it was kind of like James Bond 007, but it was called License to Bill. And within the sales kickoff, it was a chance for everybody to come together, like the Belgian office, and we had a US team as well based out in Portland, Oregon, I think it was at the time, and some people from Boston. But we all got to meet up and we did lots of games and fun stuff. But I remember the one thing that really like made me laugh a little bit was they hired a sales trainer, and this person came on board to kind of give us some sales training. And with Showpad, we were really big on sales methodologies like the Challenger sale. David had taught us like through books and through lessons about customer-centric selling and, you know, the new age of SaaS and startups. However, my kind of feeling was this sales trainer was a little bit from the old school days. So I'm talking like Sandler type training and sales trainers. And again, nothing against them. But this guy really didn't do his homework as to see what type of, we were a challenger organization, right? And what we kind of figured out was as we sat in a room and we just had a presentation by Wim Swetz, who was like that famous mountaineer, really hyped us up and pumped us up. And at the beginning, this sales trainer said, if at any point you don't agree with any of the slides that I have here, you can say bullshit. He gave us the permission to say, call bullshit. And as the slides went on, we realized that this person had done no research on Showpad as an organization, the solution we provide. And a lot of his slides kind of clashed with our mindset, our methodology, and the way that we do biz. So it kind of got to slide 3, 4, and we were just all saying bullshit, bullshit. And it actually then got to the sad point, and I felt really sorry for this guy. He just sat down on the floor and just went silent. And I remember David having to go over to this gentleman and just saying like, look, we're going to have to just cut it here. And, you know, that was something I've learned as a sales trainer. Do your homework on the company and the client you're going to come visit and what they're all about, because generic slides just don't work. But anyway, I digress. We had cool time partying, and that was a really cool thing with Showpad. It was always kind of this sort of family vibe, right? And I know some people may be like, well, work isn't family and, you know, you shouldn't treat them like family. But the way that I look at it is you will probably spend 80% of your working waking life with these type of people. So it's important to build those relationships, have fun with them. I remember the after parties were messy, and I had an opportunity to grab the microphone and MC, and my crew loved that. Like, they loved the fact that Neil was a rapper slash MC and he had sick bars. And I always remember Stein, who was, again, one of my future bosses at Showpad. He loved it every time I spat bars. But then if we come back to being back in the UK, Showpad, Neil, gearing up for this account executive life. So the one of the things that I started doing was realizing the meetings that I was booking could potentially be my accounts of the future. So I was starting to build pipe as an account executive, but as an SDR. So I was looking for, like, you know, small seated opportunities, booking meetings with these people. And sometimes, you know, it got to the end of the call and it wasn't a fit, or they're not ready to move forward. And as a saying that I've always given, your Q1 conversations will be your Q4 closes. And I was basically just nurturing this pipe and thinking, when I get promoted, I want this to be my closing pipe. So think about that. If you're an SDR and you're looking towards becoming an account executive, it would be so much more cooler to step into the role with some pre-qualified, pre-built pipe to help you, rather than just going cold and just having nothing and starting from scratch. But in that sense, like, making these notes, keeping these connections, like reaching out to people of my prospects. And the way that you'd keep them nurtured is if Showpad had any events, any webinars, just educating your audience and just keeping Showpad at top of mind. So, you know, doing this regularly and just sitting down with David, and one of the coolest books that he ever gave me was something called Insight Selling by Michael Harris. So Insight Selling was basically an art of storytelling for sales. And it's like a 120-page book. I'll even put the link to it because I think it's still a great book to read. But it shifted my mind from pitching a solution, pitching a product, pitching features, but sharing a story of, here's Jim. This was Jim's life before. This is the stuff that Jim was going through. And then working through a new way, Jim was able to achieve this. This was the personal impact to him, and this was the business impact to him. And sharing those sort of stories. And this is how I got really good at cold calling at Showpad. So imagine this, if I had a prospect, let's just say, I don't know, IBM, just for argument's sake. I would then go into the Showpad website and try and find the nearest competitor or customer that already looked like them. And I'd have the case study on the website and I'd ring that prospect, and it could sound like this. Hi, Mr. or Mrs. VP of Sales. My name's Neil. I'm calling from Showpad. The reason for my call today is we're working with competitor X. And I just say, do you mind me just sharing a quick story on what we're doing for them? And then if you want to continue this conversation, we can do so at a later point. And it would literally just be reading the case study of this was the challenge this person was facing. This was the impact to that person as their job title as VP of sales or head of sales enablement. And then here were the results that they were able to achieve. And I would then ask the question that I learned from the book is, so what's your story? And what you would find is conversations would be going for between like 5 to 6 to like up to 15 minutes with these people sharing these insights of how it works for them. I used to love it because the way I also looked at it was I'm not the expert in sales enablement. The people that I am calling are the experts and I'm the student and I'm here to learn how they do their stuff. Because I was really interested. I was a geek of sales, so I wanted to learn. And this resulted in me being able to book the meetings in these big companies just by sharing stories. And obviously the follow-up would be, cool, I'll introduce you on an email to my account executive, Ariana. I will share the case study from our Showpad customer, and I look forward to the meeting. And obviously with the Showpad tool, we could actually see if they read the case study, which pages they read, which was, you know, their most interesting point. So using your own dog food, and then I'll tell Ariana, this is what they've reviewed. This is how many times they've checked that page. This is who they forwarded it to. It's like we had that intel. It was kind of like what we called guided selling. So building all of this pipe, getting ready. And I think a really cool thing with Showpad was we literally had the app on our phone and we could build our own environments. And this was gearing up to get ready for, you know, doing demos one day as an account executive. And I was forever trying to sell Showpad to my friends outside of work, people that did work in sales. So I had some people that worked in insurance, some other people that worked in the events industry. And there was always a use case. And kind of like my pitch of when people said, so Neil, what does Showpad do? And I said, I give sales reps x-ray vision to know exactly what their prospects are doing and thinking. And that just used to blow their minds. What do you mean like x-ray? So when I showed them the solution, I could say, okay, so here's an environment that you could build. You can send this to your prospect and then you can check where they're looking and when you can send the follow-up email or the case study, or you could like, you know, how do I put this? You can just like pick pieces of different content. So here's a case study. I'll take page 2 and 5. Here's a video from YouTube. I'll put this into that. And then here's a proposal. And maybe I'm going to skip pages 3 and 5 and just bunch it all together. And I press this button and it just sends it to their email. And then I get notifications as soon as they've opened, clicked, watched, viewed, how long, which page, and all of that. And they're like, is this cheating? Is this legal? Was one of the main questions that a lot of my friends used to ask. I said, yeah, it's totally legal. It's GDPR compliant and all of that. But I also learned a lesson, which is don't sell to friends and family. Because as a sales rep, you know, I was trying to build that AE pipe for future, trying to follow up with them. Hey, so Josh, like, what do you think? Do you think your boss wants something? Yeah, do you know, we're not too sure. Or I'd get the ghost, or you just have this awkward silence. And because they were friends, then we had this iffy bit of we'd catch up for a beer. And then when it got into the point of, so can I introduce my company? Like, and it just made it awkward. And I just kind of realized, don't mix business with friends and family, because if that creates some sort of awkwardness, then that's going to impact the sort of relationship, right? Anywho, so lots of fun, lots of doing stuff, you know, living the world of sales enablement, reading books like The Challenger Sale, Insight Selling, and just really geeking out on sales and being able to, you know, meet other sales reps. And the way that I kind of looked at it, coming back to my analogy of imagine going to university and then coming back to college, we were meeting a lot of salespeople, and I wouldn't say in the dark ages, but they were very traditional. So we had manufacturing, we had biomedical kind of sales reps, you had all type of these industries that we could sell to. And when we showed them Showpad, it was kind of like we were bringing them into like a back to the future moment of going 88 miles an hour into the future of sales and the technology that you could do with your iPad on your phone and the tracking capabilities. It blew their mind. So we were seen as kind of like, you know, experts in sales, because we had like the best customers. We had like famous salespeople using our tech and singing our praises. And we're able to teach them how we prospected into their own company, how we booked the meeting, how we closed the deals. So not only were we showing a solution, but we were teaching sales to a big audience. And that in itself is pretty powerful. And you can, I think, understand why the hell I was just geeking out on this sales love. So anyway, I digress. And I need to come to a point of, okay, now getting up for that AE life. So you know, speaking with David, I was consistently hitting my target. You know, it was coming to that point and I'm just longing to become this account executive. And I felt that I'm in the right place. I've got the best tech in the world. I know the pitch. I've been on meetings with Ariana. I know how to do this. Yeah, I could do this. This is easy. So I'm really happy to say that I was given that promotion finally after a couple of months. And Neil made it to the promised land. Neil was an account executive. And I remember posting it on my personal Facebook, telling my friends and family that I finally got it, and thinking back to Zora, see, this is how it's supposed to be done. And I need to make the biggest admission, which I haven't really done in my sales career. So this is how I closed my first deal. And I just don't feel it was me doing it right. So one of our account executives at the time decided to leave Showpad shortly after I got promoted because they felt that it was time to give up and actually were thinking about leaving sales altogether, which is fine. And out of respect, I'm not going to mention that person's name. But when sitting down with David, he kind of showed me the pipeline and said, here are a couple of deals that I want you to take over and I'd like you to move towards a close. So the first one was for a company, and this is my first ever deal, Huthwaite International. So Huthwaite are the guys that own or manage Spin Selling. So Neil Rackham's Spin Selling, it's the organization of that. And I kind of looked at the notes and the details, and kind of what had happened as a next step was that sales rep was running up towards, they sent the proposal, they've done the demo, they've done all of that. And it was literally just securing the next steps and finding out, are they going to buy? And I was just like, no, but this doesn't really feel like me doing. It's just me like following up like an SDR when the other SDRs left and they're just taken over the new territory. And I just remember sending, trying to call them saying, hi, my name is Neil. I'm your new account executive and I'm da 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 da. But it was literally just an email to the decision maker and just saying, hey, I'm the new rep. I'd love to have a call just to recap what's been discussed with Showpad and see how I can assist you. And they just responded about 2 or 3 hours, said, yep, we're all ready. Just send the sales order. We'll sign it today. And I'm like, this feels like cheating. So I then go back to David and I'm just saying, what do I do? And he's like, no, just send out the DocuSign. What are you waiting for? So I send it off. And like a day later, it comes back signed. And then in the CRM, it says, Neil Buyan has closed Huthwaite International. Da, 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 da. And then it goes off on the Slack and everybody's congratulating me. But I just felt like an imposter. And I was just like, I didn't really, you know, do anything. But that was my first deal. Closed. Right. The next one I can be a bit more proud about, which was my next deal, which was a company called Highforce. And this is why I love it. And this is going back to my point of why it's good to build pipe as an SDR. So I had this lovely lady called Laura, who was marketing director for Highforce Tools. And this was only like a 10 seat opportunity, right? And it was one that I booked as an SDR as a cold call, did the opportunity, got qualified out because they just weren't ready. And I remember reaching out to Laura, the marketing director. She's already had a demo. We've already got really good rapport on. She loved the content and guides I always used to send her. And I just said, hi, Laura, it's Neil. Just to say I've actually moved into the commercial position. So if you are looking to move forward to Showpad, I'd be the main point of contact. And she replied and said, it'd be really good to have a catch up in the next week just to see what's new with Showpad. And I'm happy to say, had the catch up, 3 weeks sales cycle, and I closed my second deal. So this in the space of 30 days of being promoted as an account executive. And I thought, boom, I'm living the life. I'm a successful AE. And I felt like I'd, you know, finally got that validation of being able to close a deal. But then, you know, the next couple of months were hard. And this is where I really learned what AE life was about. So as an SDR, you're generating pipe, you're booking meetings, you're handling objections, you're booking discovery calls, you're booking demos, you're doing multi-stakeholder stuff, you're multi-threading, you're doing all that cool stuff. But when you come into an AE life, you're doing that plus much more. The things that you're coming up against is the constant rejection. Because as an SDR, you face rejection every day. But when it's your own deal in the pipe, that hits and that hurts. And it really makes you start questioning yourself. What else you face is you're dealing with other stakeholders and then you're having stakeholders that are blocking the deals. You know, like messing up the sales cycle. You have people that are ghosting you. You have prospects that are indecisive. You have prospects where priorities shift and change. And you just literally see your pipe being smaller and smaller and more things being qualified out and close dates being moved out further and further and further. And you're just sitting there just like, dude, what is going on? So yeah, that was, you know, in the next 3 or 4 months. And then another thing that I want to also share is the worst demo that I ever delivered. And it was hard. So to set the scene, self-generated meeting. I booked a meeting with the CEO of a law firm up north in the UK. And this was one of those, you know, SDR pipe, let it nurture and then bring it back up. So it came to the actual demo. I sold Showpad as, you know, the sales enablement solution. This is what it's going to be able to help with their team and all of that. And this was a demo that David, my VP of sales, also joined because I wanted to get feedback on, you know, what the master thinks of me doing demos. So we get onto the call and I have the presentation and pitch ready. And then we start going through the actual demo. And within 5 minutes, that CEO stopped me. And they were like, oh, we don't need this. And why would you need that? And I just had to keep reselling the mindset of what we're talking about here, what we're doing. And as the demo went on, there was just always a pause of, oh, I actually just was looking for a website chatbot. And I'm like, what? Chatbot? No, this is like a sales enablement solution to help you with face-to-face selling and remote. He said, yeah, this just, I don't think we could do this. And in essence, like 35 minutes of my life, which was hell, this person tore me a new a-hole and just came with every objection and everything. And it just got to a point where I just had to say to the CEO, I said, look, by the sounds of it, Showpad's not a fit. I don't think this can help you. And they were like, yeah, you know, maybe this is for the future, but yeah, definitely not what we're looking for. So I remember being in the WeWork, being in a booth, and David was sitting like 2 booths behind me. And I ended the demo and I was just like, my God, I just look shit in front of my boss. And then we come out the cubbies and David says, okay, Neil, let's go have a sit down and catch up. And he was just like, so how do you think that went? And I was like, that was horrendous. And David said them like he has a way with magical words. And it was just like, that was your worst ever demo and your last worst ever demo. He said, that CEO was really difficult and I don't think she is a good fit for Showpad. And she really ripped into you. But you'll probably learn a lot from that and you'll know how to go into your next one. He said, Neil, it's all about practice. You have to fail and you just keep going. But then he alluded to something which was very true. And he just said, there was something that I noticed whilst he was doing that presentation demo. He said, I don't think it was you. And I said, what do you mean by that? And he said, I heard other people in your pitch. And he was right. So at the time, we had two like of our top account executives of Showpad. So a guy called Bartle and obviously Ariana. And these were two people that I hawked and watched and loved and were obsessed with. And he said, I heard parts of Bartle and I heard parts of Ariana, but I didn't hear Neil Bouyan. And I just said, yeah, you're right. And he said, what were you trying to do? I said, well, I see them as like the top dogs and I really want to emulate them. And he again gave me some great advice. And he said, look, Bartle and Ariana are really great because that's their style. They are two different distinct sellers and they have different ways of doing things. And he says, what I want you to do is obviously take elements of that. But the reason I hired you, Neil, is you're very energetic. You're very easy to listen to. You have a way with words and explaining complex things and simplifying it. He says, you need to create your own sort of style. And he was right. And I think that was one of my best lessons as an account executive or as a salesperson. So, you know, the demos that followed after, the way that I used to speak to them or my prospects wasn't like Ariana or Bartle, but it was like me explaining Showpad to my friends and family who didn't understand tech, who didn't understand SaaS. And, you know, having those words of, we give you that x-ray vision or imagine that bucket with 1,000 pictures. And I was selling the way that I would do it so that even my pet dog would understand. And that made my demo so much more powerful because the way David kind of gave me a really cool tip was you've got to be careful of the picture that you paint in people's heads. And anybody that's been in any of my coaching or training sessions, they know this one. So if I said to you right now, pink elephants, what are you thinking? You're probably thinking pink elephants, right? However, a part of my audience right now may be thinking of, you know, something they've seen on a cartoon on Nickelodeon or Cartoon Network, or maybe some of your kids' stuff on TV. But the pink elephants I'm thinking of is the 1930s Disney cartoon, Dumbo. Where's that scene where he just gets a bit wavy and I don't know what's going on there, but That's my version. So similarly, if I said to you like dashboards or reports, what you're thinking of could be HubSpot. Some other people listening or watching this could be thinking of Salesforce, or some people could be thinking of Microsoft Dynamics. So he said you have to be very careful of the picture that you're painting. So you have to make sure that when you're painting this picture, people can understand or relate to that picture the way that you're saying it, right? And I'm doing this right now with you all. which then leads me on to one of my toughest demos that I ever done, which was to a blind person, or to caveat that, a partially blind person. So an inbound lead had come into my territory where a marketing director had requested a demo, but within the notes or the comments in the CRM, they advised that they are partially blind and are able to see things. And I was like, how do I show a demo to somebody that can't see everything? So I remember like worrying, thinking this is going to be a hard demo. So I called up the prospect, a lady called Liz, who I'm still connected to on LinkedIn, and I love her post. And she just kind of said to me, said, look, I only lost my sight in the last few years. So I've seen tech. I'm head of marketing. I understand all of this. But Neil, what you have to do, and here we go, she says, you have to paint it of a picture. You have to remove any buzzwords or any technical jargon and just talk to me as if, you know, we're just in a day-to-day normal life, we're at a cafe or something like that, and I'm your friend. So again, I had to kind of learn that thing of painting a picture to somebody who couldn't actually really see my solution. And this is where the analogy of, hey, Liz, so with your marketing content, imagine if you have a bucket with 1,000 pictures in it and you can see which pictures are being picked out of the bucket the most and viewed. Great. And I said, if you had that sort of power with your marketing team, with all that piece of content you have, how would that help you? And it kind of alluded to, you know, we could focus on the content which is most performing. We could understand what isn't performing. We can get feedback from the salespeople as to why they're not using it. And rather than spending more money to create new content, we could just optimize the content that we have today. So another caveat and reality is, well, it didn't close, but she did give me some really good feedback as to that was one of the best non-seeing demos she'd had, because I explained it so simply. And again, shouts to PJ, one of the co-founders. PJ had this thing, acronym, when it came to selling, he called it KISS, K-I-S-S, keep it stupid simple. And that was something that was, you know, uttered throughout Showpad, of just try to simplify everything to a level that people can understand. And don't try to use any sort of bravado or big terms to make yourself look big. And I really love that sort of mindset within Showpad. So other experiences that I had was being able to go out onto the road. And this was one of the reasons that I got into sales, is I wanted to travel. I wanted to meet new people. So I used to love on a Sunday, like looking at my calendar and thinking about all the different trips that I was going to take up north. You know, go Showpad, go solo and be this account executive life, and grabbing trains and trying to like make sure I got back home on time. And there were some really early mornings and some evenings where I came home really late. And bearing in mind, I was a new dad as well. So sometimes having the ability to work from home, like sitting with Blake as he was a baby, as a toddler, and you know, that was all fun. And just thinking, yeah, your daddy's an AE and we're going to build this life for you and all those sort of things. But, you know, some of the other lessons that I learned, like a really hard lesson, was where I lost a deal. So there was this one point where I had an opportunity for a company that provided some sort of car solutions. And this was a sales director that I cold called, and he loved my approach so much that that was the reason that he took the meeting. Not saying that should be a qualifying point for all meetings, but he just loved my approach, so he welcomed me up. I remember coming up north and he organized like a conference room. I had all my gear and my tech, and he like brought in 5 to 8 of his sales reps, and I gave the Showpad demo, and again their minds were blown to this voodoo sales magic. And I remember sitting next to the sales director, and he said, you know what, Neil, he said, I don't normally take meetings, but the way that you've approached, the way that you've done your demo, he said, this is the way that I would love my sales reps, you know, to sell. Like, you're an inspiration. And that meant a hell of a lot to me, you know, coming from what I saw as a vet in sales. And this was one of the cool things where it really did build up your mind in terms of sales, the profession, the type of professionals that you're meeting with. But this is where it goes sour. So I come back to London and I was speaking to my sales manager at the time. And this person really wanted me to really up my close because I wasn't closing much. Like, there was, you know, worries about Neil. And I was asked about this deal of, you know, what's the next step? And I said, you know what, I don't think they're ready. I think this is one for nurture. And this manager at the time was like really adamant that we need to bring this in, we need to close. And they instructed me to send out an email about an offer and making it time-based, and this is what they can get, and, you know, creating a proposal. And my heart was just like, and my gut was just saying like, no, this is just wrong. We shouldn't do this. But, you know, I had to take the ideas of my boss at the time. So sent out the email, then did a follow-up call, and the prospect was just getting really hard to reach. And I was just like, what's going on? And then I'm getting pushed by my manager to ask, what's going on? Is this commit? Like, what's going on? I've got to update David, blah, blah, blah. And I finally got the sales director on the phone. So this was a guy that I really built really good rapport with, really liked me as a salesperson, et cetera, et cetera. And he just said on the phone, Neil, there's a reason that I'm not getting back to you. If anything, I'm actually quite offended by the email that you sent recently. And I was like, oh, sorry, why is that? He said, well, look, you built up a really good relationship. I was all in for Showpad, but I felt that you were trying to pressure me into a sale. And for that reason, I'm qualifying myself out. And that just hit in my chest. And I was just like, I knew it. And then I had to go back to my manager and just say, look, this is what's happened. And they said, okay, well, cool. You know, it is what it is. But it was at that point that I kind of learned is to go with my gut instinct. And I get it from a sales management point of view. They have a job to do and everything. But I know my prospects. I'm the one that went into that conversation. And again, I am open for coaching. And I've always admitted I'm not the best at closing, even now, right? But it was a hard lesson to learn. But obviously, you know, what ensued thereafter was the discussion that I had to have with David Dupree around my lack of closing. And like, you know, where I'm a year into being a sales an AE, a year and a couple of months, and coming to a quarter where Neil's not closed stuff for days. And I'm sitting there and thinking, this AE life wasn't everything I expected or cracked up to be. I'm not closing stuff. The pressure of maybe thinking about quitting sales, quitting this job. I've got a kid on the line. I've got a partner to look after. I'm a family man. All of this pressure was building. And I was just like, I was at my lowest point. But not all is woe. Like, things did turn out good. But on that point, I think this is where I'm going to end the story for today. And as a follow-up, I'd like to discuss how I made the transition from a failing AE and then went into one of the best steps in my career thereafter. So hopefully this episode has brought you some insights as to what it was like, you know, joining a new startup, going into the AE life, building stuff with my account executives, the company culture, the things I learned, the highs, the lows. And I'm really proud to have spent that time at Showpad and learning all of these things, because it has made me the salesperson that I am today. And obviously there is a story to continue, but as a gentle request, if you're listening to this in your local podcast platform, please make sure that you give us a rating, share this episode with anybody that you think could benefit from Neil's failures. And if you're watching this on our YouTube, to help out on the algorithm, please make sure that you like, comment, and subscribe down below. And I want to say a massive thank you to all of our listeners, watchers, fans, and subscribers, wherever you are in the world, like over 100,000 downloads in over like 40 to 50 countries. I get messages on my LinkedIn DMs and Insta and everything where people have said to me things such as, thank you for your podcast. It's helped me start my tech sales career. Or, you know, I've listened to things and I've learned, and it's really helped me like come out of tough moments. Or, you know, when I've jumped into coaching conversations and I ask that question, how did you come across me? Or why did you pick me as your sales coach? I've actually been listening to your podcast for a number of years and I really like what you do. So a big thank you to everybody that helps get the message. So like, the reason for this podcast, for this show, is the mission is to help more sales development reps, to make them into happy sellers, to really understand people's stories. It's not just all about tactical and, you know, there's some really great podcasts out there for that, but it's the people that make this journey. And, you know, that saying of people buy from people, but the bit that they miss is people buy from people that understand them. And I want to say that sales development is one of the coolest professions in the world of tech sales. I'm a big fan and advocate for it. In a way where this show, where I get to meet so many cool people to learn about those stories and then share that with you, our audience. And a big shout out to the audience that supports us. I genuinely, like, it means a hell of a lot to me. I'm doing this for 4 years. Didn't think we'd go this long, but I'm really, really grateful. So again, look out for new episodes. Again, if you're listening on this podcast or if you're watching this on YouTube, please help us out by giving us support. That's all we ask. And leave a little comment down. But also let me know, what do you think of Neil's story so far? And what do you think about, you know, those failings, those winnings, those moments? Can you relate to them? Let me know down in the comments. But this is your host, Neil Buchan, on the SDR Discord Call Show, wishing everybody a great and successful week, and most importantly, happy selling.